Welcome back to part two of Psychics Who Help Solve Crimes. Have the cases so far made you a believer, or at the very least, opened your mind to the possibility? Up next are five more cases showcasing how psychics have helped police. Okay, so the first case I'm going to tell you about today is Melanie Uribe. She was 31 years old. She was a nurse in Burbank, California. December 15th, 1980, she didn't show up to work, and this was another case where the employer really knew this person and believed, you know, they never did a no-call, no-show. Yeah. So called the police when the shift was over and she'd never come, because they thought maybe at first, like, she got delayed or...
Late or something.
So they called the police. Police went to her home, and her roommate said she hadn't seen her since she left for work. December 16th, so the next day, police found her truck with her nurse's uniform in it. The truck had been set on fire.
Oh.
They put out a media alert. They asked for anybody who knew, had any information, any kind of, that kind of thing. And witnesses said they heard a woman scream and saw two men force their way into the woman's truck and drive away. Okay.
Nobody reported that?
Apparently. Not until the media alert went out the next day. I would think if you really saw, like if you saw that, you would do something. But yeah. I don't know. Some people, let's talk about Kitty Genovese. I mean, come on. You know that case where the woman was screaming and being murdered and everybody heard it. I think you do have that happen more often than it should.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't really surprise me that people didn't call.
Just again, the 80s. I feel like more people cared back then. But maybe that's just my perception.
I think that's your perception. Yeah. I do, because I don't think... In the 80s, we were all, like, everybody, you know, for themselves kind of a thing. Like, well, I just feel like...
But, yeah, but, like, I feel like we knew more of our neighbors. Because there wasn't, like, phones and stuff. Not everybody had a phone. So it was, like, when you were over at a friend's house, like, their parents just kind of made sure you were cool and...
And in our neighborhood where we lived, in the row houses and stuff, all the parents knew all the kids and...
And vice versa. Yeah. Yeah, so I feel like it was more... Like, now, I don't know my neighbor. Well, I do know my neighbors. But if I go back to my sister's house, which is the house I grew up in, I know one of my neighbors. Like, and I just feel like, again, being an introvert, like, I kind of knew my immediate neighbors. But other than that, like...
Yeah, I don't know. I live in a development. And so I know my neighbors on each side.
Exactly.
And maybe a house or two down.
Yeah.
But past that, like, I don't really talk to anybody here.
Exactly. So I feel like it was more prevalent back then to know kind of everybody in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think. But I don't know. And I didn't see anything that said they called the police. I mean, maybe somebody did, but there was no information about that. So Etta Smith was a psychic and she heard about Melanie's disappearance and she had a very clear visual of where she was. Like, she just saw this picture in her head. She saw a canyon, a curving road, shrubbery, hills in the backdrop, and a dirt path leading to something white, but she couldn't tell what it was. Etta never claimed to be a psychic. That was never something that she did. She never, like, did readings. It wasn't something she did. She had a regular job. Actually, she was, like, I want to say she was, like, some kind of an engineer. Like, she was very smart. Cool. So nothing that would point her to this kind of vision. But her feelings were so strong that she did go to the police.
Wow.
The officer that she spoke to knew exactly where she was talking about. Etta pointed it out on a map, and it was a remote part of the San Fernando Valley called Lopez Canyon. So the officer said, look, it's a remote place, hard to get to. Come back tomorrow. We'll get air support. We'll get up there and we'll search. So that was the plan, but Etta kept having this nagging feeling like she had to go.
Mm-hmm.
So she drove up there. Actually, she had to go pick up her kids and her niece because she was already home or late getting home from work.
Mm-hmm.
So she picked them up and took them with her, which I'm not sure I would do.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would do
that.
But
again, if you didn't have an option, I mean, like...
Yeah. You do what you gotta do.
Right. But, and I'm not 100% sure how old the kids were. So as they're driving up to the canyon, she sees fresh tire tracks. So she stops the car, she gets out. She starts walking, and her kids are with her. And her daughter saw something in the brush. It was Melanie. It was her white nursing shoes sticking out of the bush. It was just like her vision.
Wow.
She called the police. They came out. Melanie had been robbed, raped, and beaten to death. And police had absolutely zero leads. So Etta became primary suspect.
Of course.
Passed 2 polygraph tests, but even so, she was booked as an accessory to murder.
What?
And she was locked up for 4 days.
What? Based on what?
The fact that she found the body and knew exactly where it was.
I know, but... Ugh. Craziness.
I mean, that's circumstantial evidence at best, isn't it?
Exactly. Like, how do you book someone on that?
So a police informant came forward and said, look, there were a couple of guys bragging about committing this murder and getting away with it. The man that was bragging was arrested, and he quickly gave up other people, because that's how criminals are.
Yep.
There was a 17-year-old, who they didn't name because he was a minor, a 21-year-old named Spencer Nelson, and a 20-year-old named Lewis Carnell Morgan. Etta got, obviously, out of jail. They got convicted, I believe, but I couldn't find a sentence for them.
Mm-hmm.
Etta also won a civil suit for wrongful imprisonment. Now, she had filed it for, like, $750,000, and they only gave her, like, $24,000.
Still, for 4 days, I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, it was 4 days. I mean, imagine her kids and...
I know, like...
There's so much that goes into that, like, her reputation.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It is.
And I don't know if that makes you want to do things like that ever again.
I mean, I'm sure for her, especially. Like, if this is something that you do on a regular, like, psychic is your thing or whatever, I don't know if that's anybody's real thing, but you know what I mean? Like, it would be different. But if this is something that you just,
a one-off. Out of the norm, yeah.
Then, yeah, I could understand completely why you would not want to do this again. I think, I would like to think that the benefit outweighs the, you know, the negativity. And that should she ever come forward again, because she has this past case on her record and the false imprisonment on her record, that people would leave her the hell alone. But not everybody's like that.
And I found different things. Like, one thing said she never had a vision again, but other ones said, you know, it's possible she did. Like, I don't know.
I mean, like, again, without knowing, like, her history or anything like that, like, I think it's possible that you could just... Like, I have weird shit happen to me that I don't put much stake in, but it's just weird little stuff that happens every now and again. But I don't go around calling myself psychic or doing anything like that. Because...
Dude, I used to have dreams about stuff that would happen, like, a day or two later. It was so bizarre.
I have... Mine actually happened a long time later. When it actually happens. But yeah, I mean, I think all of us have that... ability. And that's another thing. Edgar Cayce used to say that everybody had that ability. It was just untapped into. And you could learn how to tap into it.
I think that may be true. That, because I think a lot of times, and there's not a nice way to really say this, but I think a lot of times people are just completely oblivious to what's going on around them.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you paid more attention and tuned in a little more, you could pick up more things.
Yeah.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know. And whether I would call that psychic or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, again, here's a woman who found the exact spot.
Yeah,
kind of. With barely any effort. How do you prove that out?
Exactly. Well, and I mean, I'm sure for her, especially if it's not something she had ever done before, I'm sure part of her was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, what if I'm wrong? Or... But you just get these overwhelming feelings that you just can't ignore. And you have to figure it out.
I don't think I've ever had that.
You've never had, like...
I don't know. I'd really have to think about it, I think. I don't think there's ever been anything that's pushed me so hard to have to do something. I don't know. I'd really have to think about it.
I'm sure there's probably been at least one time in your life.
Does it count when you want to choke somebody out?
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe not then.
Next case.
All right, we're going to talk about Maria Scott.
Okay.
This one's kind of short also. She was 27 years old when she went missing She was a resident at Triple Care Farm Rehab, which was apparently like a youth rehab center, which I didn't understand because she's 27, but I thought maybe I just don't understand things. I'm pretty sure this was in England, but I could be wrong. So, October 2003, her decomposed body was discovered wrapped in a quilt and dumped on the grounds of the Triple Care Farm. She had been beaten and stabbed 5 times.
Wow.
Authorities could not identify the killer. They suspected her former partner, Jason Maher, and eventually began to suspect a guy named Mark Brown, who was a staff member at the Triple Care Farm. After 4.5 years with no developments, investigators turned to a psychic named Debbie Malone. You know, desperate times call for desperate measures.
Right.
And I feel like in a lot of cases, police, that's not one of the first places they turn, but when they get desperate, I do think they're likely to turn. I mean, because what do you have to lose at that point?
Well, exactly. And even if it gives you one bit of information to give you a place to go and a lead to go down, then at least it's something.
Yeah, and I'd rather waste my time searching for something that isn't there than not try.
Yeah.
So they gave her a bangle that had been on Maria's body, and she was able to give very specific details. She led authorities to where the murder actually occurred, pointing out blood on the walls.
Wow.
And directed authorities to look in a drain pipe where they actually found the murder weapon, the knife.
Wow.
She said she felt the spirit of the killer walking through her, which had only ever happened when someone was dead.
Right.
And it turned out Mark Brown had actually committed suicide. So they wound up, and the place where they found the blood and everything was the cabin that Mark Brown lived in on the farm. So she didn't necessarily, I mean, she kind of solved the case, but they were kind of down that direction, and it just more confirmed it for them.
Yeah, well, she gave them more evidence, obviously, with the murder weapon and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's kind of interesting. He killed himself. Mm-hmm. Really? Guilt get to you much?
Look, I have issues with people who, you know, commit crimes and then kill themselves, because fucking, you were able to kill somebody else, man up and accept what you got coming.
Exactly.
And I feel like killing yourself at that point is just the, it is. It's a complete cop-out. Who was the sports player? Aaron Fernandez?
Mm-hmm.
When he did that shit, Aaron Hernandez. And when he committed suicide, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you had no problem affecting all these other people's lives, and now you're gonna take the easy way?
Mm-hmm.
Like, fuck that. You just proved to everyone you're a fucking coward and a piece of shit.
Yeah. As long as it doesn't affect their lives, you know, it's cool. But now that they might get caught, different story.
Yeah, I'll never understand things like that. Ever.
Me neither.
Next case I'm going to tell you about is actually not a murder.
Ooh!
Okay, but it is still pretty interesting. This is about Tyson Efford. He was 18 years old when he was kidnapped in November 1991. He was lured from his job by 2 men. I guess they came into the store and one of them was like, we hit your truck in the parking lot. And so he went out to go see what was going on, and the other guy grabbed him and they kidnapped him.
Oh, because I'm thinking they got puppies or something.
No, that's how we would get kidnapped.
Oh, right. What you said made way more sense.
We would totally. Okay. Even puppies, as old as we are, right? As old as we are, we would still totally fall for that. Should I might go for a chocolate bar? I don't know.
Yeah.
2 days after his disappearance, his family went to a psychic named Carol Pate to see if she could maybe help find him. She felt his picture and she said, he's alive, which the family was just psyched about. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes you go to a psychic and they tell you the person is dead. And true or not true, like, you want to keep hope alive as long as you can.
Yeah.
She said she saw him with 2 other men. They were playing Russian roulette. Ooh. There was sexual torture involved.
Ugh.
She could see the room he was in. She saw a belt buckle, cowboy boots, and the word ridge.
Mm.
She brought them within 1/2 mile of where Tyson actually was being held captive on Ridge Road.
Wow.
Tyson, after I think it was like 6 days, talked one of the men into letting him go. I have no idea how he managed it. That's I don't know if he promised to not tell anybody or what. I couldn't find a lot of details, but he got them to let him go.
Wow.
And when his family, you know, when he went back to his family and they told him about Carol, and Carol told him the things she saw, he said all of them were absolutely true. And there's no way she could have known. Like, she described what the men looked like. She described the exact room. And he just said, she's got it. Like, he was like, I don't believe in psychics necessarily, but I believe in her.
Wow.
So, kind of crazy.
It is.
And I think she was pretty close to finding him, obviously.
Yeah.
A half mile away is not that far.
No.
Just not unfortunately didn't find him. But he got out and he lived, so that's good.
Did the fuckers get charged?
I could not find goddamn shit on that.
Well, I hope they did. In my brain, they did.
I'm thinking they had to. I mean, he got away and he knew who they were.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm guessing they had to have. But I could not find much at all.
Huh. Go Carol with your bad self.
Yeah, Carol. Get down, girl. Alright, next up, we're going to talk about Mark Green. Now, Mark Green was a 31-year-old art lecturer. He was last seen, he had gone out for the night into, like, a party kind of district, like a city, mm-hmm. you know,
like a downtown,
whatever. Yeah, thank you. I can't think of the words I want. He was last seen on CCTV leaving a Kudos bar and speaking to another man. So they had the man on video, but I think they only had, like, his side profile at an angle. So I don't know that they got a good shot of his face.
Well, CCTVs are not known for the best pixelation, which, why?
With all the technology we have.
Yeah, like, my phone takes a better picture than CCTV. Just saying. Can we advance this stuff, please? Anyway, go
ahead. There are some that are really good. So, he was missing January 2002, and he was missing for 5 months. His aunt went to a psychic named Diane Lazarus for a reading. Now, I don't know that she was necessarily going to talk about Mark, but I think she was really just going for a general reading. But Diane said Mark came through.
Ooh.
And told her he was dead. And the aunt took everything she said with, you know how they tape your readings?
Yeah, yeah.
So she took the tape of the reading and went to the police. This led police to the estate in Birmingham, where Mark's body would be found later. Also gave details about the murder and the materials involved. She predicted that a TV show would bring out the killer. It wasn't clear how he wound up there, but Mark had wound up at the home of Robert McMahon, who was 24. McMahon used a 20-pound gas canister to beat Mark over the head repeatedly.
Oh, dang.
His skull was broken into more than 20 pieces.
Wow.
Then he dismembered the body, cutting off the legs and the head. And later in court, I think it was, he said he would talk to the head and cut off an ear to keep it as a trophy. Called his younger brother, James, and asked him to help bury the body. And James was terrified of Robert, so he went and did it.
Yeah.
Mark's parents would go on TV and they would ask for help to find their son, like a plea for help. And I don't know what show it was on. It could have been the news. It could have been like an Unsolved Mysteries. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But James saw it. Hmm. And he started to feel really guilty and came forward and confessed.
Good for him.
So TV show brought him in. The motive was unknown. But it was believed that Robert McMahon and James, too, they both were, Nazi sympathizers. They were very homophobic, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And Mark was gay.
Yeah.
So they think it was homophobia.
Yeah. Hate crime.
Yes. Which is just very sad. And they think that it's possible that's how McMahon lured him back to the house for a drink.
That's really sad.
Yeah. But predicting a TV show would bring out the killer is pretty good.
Yeah. I'm thinking it was America's Most Wanted, but no, probably not.
Not after 90s? Like 5 months. No, this is 2002.
Oh, wow. I wonder what it was then. Yeah, maybe it was just the news.
Yeah, and it might have been. It might have just been them on the news pleading for help. You know, they do that for a lot of missing person cases.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
We are on our last case. All right. This one is a quote-unquote famous case. I like to think that most people know these things, and then I realize that I most people probably don't, and it's just me. So when I hear the names, I'm like, oh, I know that one. And then other people are like, what are you talking about? So this was in England as well. So, again, most people probably don't know it. So
yeah,
I'm just going to keep my mouth shut about that. This is regarding Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman. They were both 10 years old. They had been spending time with each other for the past couple days, like their families had been hanging out together. Mm-hmm. And they had a barbecue that day. The girls left at around 6:15 to go to the store for candy. Don't think they really informed anybody. Not sure.
They're 10 years it's old kinda... and they just went and left for candy and didn't tell anybody?
Yeah. It's kind of iffy if they told anyone or not.
I don't know about you, but my mom would beat my ass.
Oh, hell to the yeah. So this was actually August 4th, 2002. So, I mean, it what's that, 20 years ago? I mean, 20 years ago, yeah. My even in my 20s, my mom probably would have killed me.
Yep.
2 hours later, like at around 8 o'clock, Holly's mom was looking for them because she wanted to let them know people were leaving the barbecue and mm-hmm. to come say goodbye and stuff, but she couldn't find them. And she was just like, well, curfew's at 8:30. That's really soon. I'm sure they'll be home by curfew, so I'll wait.
I'm sorry, but if I don't see my dog for 2 hours, I'm like, hello, here, girl, let alone my kid. Just saying. Maybe I'm just, like, uber paranoid. Well, maybe I love my dogs, but...
I think it's hard. Like, so my husband and I have this argument all the time about our daughter, who is 14 right now, and how much freedom to give. Because you don't want to hold them in, but you don't want to let them go and have things happen either.
Agreed, but it's more of the, okay, like in your instance, she's 14. Okay, you want to go walk around the neighborhood with your friend. Okay, walk around the neighborhood in an hour, just check in. Still life. Like, it's not a big thing. You know, you're giving them the freedom. They're still out there in the world, but you know they're alive.
But then I think about, like, when we were that age,
we nobody were knew out. Her. I no. know. Nobody knew where we are. But again, now's a different day and age.
It's true.
Now they call kids like we were free-range children. And, like,
I know.
That just boggles my mind. Like,
and in England, I don't know what the culture is there in terms of things true. Like this. Yeah. I don't know, like, if free-range kids is a thing or if they maybe... There's less crime in Europe in general.
Yeah, like, England didn't carry guns for the longest time. Like, now they do, but their cops didn't carry guns for forever.
And so I kind of wonder if they're at a point there where we were 40 years ago.
Yeah, maybe. You know what I mean? That's a good point. But so, still, just as a me personally, again, if I don't see my dog for 2 hours.
But if you grew up in a place like that, I don't know. It's hard to say. So... Because I hear you, and, like, I'd be the same way in one way and in another way. I am one who pushes for more freedom just because I had more freedom, and I think...
But again, it's shitty not,
to say it, but, like, you have to...
It's not that I'm saying I don't want them to have freedom. I just want to know where you are. Hey, just let me know that you left. Like, yeah. That you're coming back, when you expect to be, like...
You mean, like, the time my son left and went to his friend's house and was like, oh, I'm going over to, like, Joey's house or whatever, and then Joey came and knocked on the door?
What?
Oh, no. And I was like, the fuck?
See, that requires an ass beating. And he
was
beating.
Like, well, Joey was eating dinner, so I just was, like, waiting around. Nah, dude. Nah.
Mm-mm. You wait inside Joey's house at that point.
Or you come Joey back knows. Home and wait.
Yeah, but Joey doesn't show up at this house, and you're still the fuck out.
Yeah.
APB.
Talk man. About little heart attacks, right?
Well, that's just it, like... You can know that your kids are out and know that they're coming back. Like, my mom, even as an adult, like, my mom's like, hey, where are you going when you coming home? Like, and when I started dating in my 30s, like, I'm not stupid. Like, this is where I'm going. This is who I'm going with.
You
just made it sound like
you've never dated until your 30s.
No, really I just did. Wasn't that responsible until I'm my 30s.
I was like, you dated in high school. It's I not did. Like you did.
No, but like my mom knew those people. But when I started like doing the online dating things in my 30s, which I don't suggest anybody do. It's horrible. I didn't know these people. You know, I talked to them, but I didn't know who they were. Like, not really. Not like when you're in high school and you're dating somebody from high school. So like I would tell my mom, like, this is who I'm going out with. This is what I know. This is where I'm going. This is, you know, if I'm not back tonight, call the cops. You know, just trying to be responsible. And even as a kid, my mom was like, where are you going? Who are you going with? When are you coming home? Even after I got my license or whatever. Just because if I didn't come home when she expected me or she didn't know I was
they'd
out.
They'd have a place to start.
Yeah, they'd have something.
Yes. You my know? Sister and I have had those conversations. Like, always, if you're going to go out with someone you don't know... Let me know who, give me the information, yes. Just in case.
And I know certain parents that, certain friends of mine that are parents, when their kids go to school, it's really weird. I think it's really weird, but it's actually kind of clever. They take a picture of their kid when they leave for school.
That is kind of smart in a way.
If anything happens, they know exactly what their kid was wearing that
day. I'm going to tell you right now that we were just hanging out with my daughter, and I couldn't tell you what the fuck she was wearing.
So. I can. That's she was sad. She was wearing some sort of white sweater with something on it, probably some anime stuff, because that's what she's into. And I'm going to guess some shorts because I could see her legs. So I'm going to guess there were shorts under there. And
I wasn't sure just, freaking hope so.
Yeah, she wasn't just freeballing it up there. No, but only reason I know is because I was like, oh, is she wearing pants under there or shorts under there?
I've asked that question. No, like, I don't have that kind of memory. And so that's actually kind of smart.
Mm-hmm.
Because how would you? I wouldn't know.
Well, that's just
You're going to leave later, and I'm going to be like, what the fuck was Carrie wearing? And I probably have no idea.
I'm wearing it, and I don't even know what I'm wearing. So, like, I am shit out of luck. But as a parent, I thought that was kind of clever. Because, I mean, you don't know at any point, you know, kids, you know, being swiped. And like you and I have discussed just in this podcast, somebody has puppies, and we're gone. Yeah. Man, you are not going to see us.
It's so true, though.
Now the whole world
makes
knows.
Makes me so sad. Yeah, if you guys want to kidnap us, now you know how to do puppies. It. That's all we need in life.
Just bring us puppies.
I love puppies. So I'll take kitties too.
Yes, kitties.
I mean, and honestly, if you have some really cool animals like sloths or lemurs, it's totally on.
Oh yeah, and if they're babies, it's even better. Oh god, yeah.
Baby anything.
Yeah.
Well, except humans. I don't care about that.
No. They cry and scream. They're kind of ugly and annoying, so no.
Oh, God. They're terrible people. Okay.
Baby animals. Have baby animals. Even baby skunks. Baby skunks are so cute.
Oh, baby anything.
They
is
stink,
cute.
But oh, my God, are they cute.
Okay.
Anyway, back to the story. 10-year-old girls, they left. Parents were looking for them, couldn't find them. It was near curfew, 8:30, so they figured they'd be back.
So when they still hadn't come back at 8:30, Holly's mom called Jessica's mom to see maybe they went over there. And they hadn't. So they kind of waited a bit. I mean, I feel like as a parent, you don't want to be paranoid. You don't want to be that parent who's like, my child's 1 minute late and, you know. But at the same time,
you don't know where your kid is.
Yeah. And you don't know how long they've been gone.
Exactly.
So
when was the last time you saw? I think it kind of depends on that information.
Yeah.
You kind of search the known avenues, like she went to the other parent and was like, are they over there? Do you know where they would have gone? Like, that would have been, do you know where they would have gone? Like, you try.
And they might have been making phone calls after that. It doesn't, I don't really know what the gap was between the time that Holly's mom called Jessica's mom and when the police were called. Police were called at about 10. So, okay. You're talking about an hour and a half,
yeah.
Which isn't terrible.
So, they could have been searching other avenues in that time. It's not like absolutely. They're just sitting on the couch, like, twiddling their thumbs.
I doubt it. Yeah. I'm sure they both were calling people. Holly's family called a psychic named Dennis McKenzie, who I think we talked about in an earlier case, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He said he immediately knew they were dead.
Aww.
He described a brown-haired man with a low IQ. He said the girls were killed the same night they disappeared. He described the view from the house where the girls were murdered and that there was a ditch outside the window. Police confirmed through CCTV that the girls made it to the store. There were also witnesses there who said they saw them.
Mm-hmm.
One of the witnesses was a guy named Ian Huntley. Now, Ian had a girlfriend named Maxine Carr, who was a teaching assistant at the school the girls went to. And Ian, I think he worked at the school. I don't know what he did. I think he was like a caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
And he either worked at that school or one nearby. The girls had had Maxine and they liked her. And Maxine was going for a teaching position, full time.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ian said he talked to the girls about Maxine and they had asked about the teaching position. And he told them that, you know, she didn't get it. And that was the last time that he saw them.
Mm-hmm.
They were fine when he left. About 2 weeks later, on August 17th, a man named Keith Pryor discovered the bodies in a 5-foot-deep irrigation ditch. They were in an advanced state of decomposition, and there had been an attempt to burn the bodies.
Ugh.
Meanwhile, Ian Huntley was granting a whole bunch of interviews to people, to different news outlets. He declared himself in these interviews to be the last person to see the girls, which is honestly not something you ever want to do.
No.
Because if you're the last person, that puts lots of suspicion on you.
And not only that, if you're self-proclaiming that, how would you know that?
Well, I think his point was, you know, as far as everyone knew, he was the last person. Like, he...
That's different than saying you're the last person, you know what I mean?
I don't disagree. And he kind of became the unofficial spokesperson for the community, like, about everyone searching for the girls. And sometimes Maxine would actually appear with him on these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean, it's not that they were weird about it. I think everybody was pretty accepting of it. But later, you know, hindsight's 20/20.
Of course.
So later it would look bad. Police were a bit suspicious of him. Just the way he was acting and kind of, like, taking all of this on himself and, you know, it was kind of odd. It's not mm-hmm. like he had a very close relationship with them.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit too much.
Yeah, so they sent an officer, one officer, to search his house. And the officer thought that there was a couple of things a little weird. The first thing he thought was weird was that there were clothes out on the clothesline, even though it had been raining.
Yeah, super weird.
So he was like, that's, you know, but...
You could have left him up there. It could have, like, started raining and you weren't home.
You never know.
Yeah.
Right? But he was like, okay, that's a little strange. And then Huntley had actually asked him, how long does DNA last? Which, if you're even suspected in a crime, that's not some shit you should be asking.
No. That's something you Google.
Now, here's... Go Google. Help people commit crime. No. I say that's not something you should be asking, but I could totally see myself asking shit like that. Like, asking out of curiosity, like, why would this be, or what do you do with that? Like, I am the question person, so I could see myself being an asshole.
I mean, I probably wouldn't think about it immediately if I was truly asking in complete innocence, like, can you get DNA off the body, like, to find how long does DNA last? Like, I could see myself asking on that in curiosity that are they going to be able to figure out who the killer is, not realizing that that might, you know,
right, exactly.
Incriminate
exactly
myself,
what I mean.
Or make me have some suspicious. So, yeah, I could see myself asking that innocently. And then thinking about it and going back later and being like, dude, I didn't kill her. I was just asking to hopefully so you can find the killer.
What?
Yeah. Which by that point, damage done.
Right.
So
they're like, okay, so just say you killed her. It's fine.
Yeah. I tend to think about things after the fact and go, oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Yeah, not that smart on the uptake.
Hmm. So Huntley and Carr were interrogated by police. Maxine said she was home when the girls stopped by the house because that's what the story changed to. They had been walking by the house. And Ian said, like, he was outside washing the car or some shit, or the dog or something. And she said she was in the house, she was actually in the bath, so she didn't see the girls. But the truth was she has actually been at her mom's. And they're able to prove this stuff out. Like, let's just be honest. When did I say this happened?
August 17th, when they found?
2002.
Mm-hmm.
So... there's ways to prove this out. I mean, it's very simple at that point. It's not like we're in the 60s. Locals from Huntley's hometown recognized him on the interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they called the police and they said, hey, not sure if you guys know, but he's been investigated for rape and for underage girls.
That's nice.
So while he wasn't necessarily convicted, that doesn't look good.
No.
In an interview, Carr had referred to the girls in the past tense, so that's not good.
Yeah,
that's
that means you know they're
the
dead.
Tongue,
mm-hmm.
Which gets you in trouble. And actually, there's a recent case where I saw that, where it was two parents mm-hmm. with their kid, and the mother or something referred to him in the past tense.
Mm.
And automatically, it, like, flips the switch, too.
Yep.
Why did you say that? Their clothes were found partially burnt and dumped in a bin at the school where Huntley worked. And, of course, his fingerprints were on the bin. So,
mm-hmm.
he wasn't very careful about this.
No.
He was found guilty, two counts of murder, life imprisonment, with a minimum of 40 years. And Carr was charged with perverting the course of justice and two counts of assisting an offender. She pled guilty to the first charge and was sentenced to 3.5 years and released on probation after 21 months. So, she's actually out. They did say that the things that Mackenzie described, like the view, matched exactly.
So this car chick, she is the girlfriend of the guy who killed these kids, suspected maybe rape, based on past activities, and she knew the children, and she allowed this to happen.
She wasn't home, so you can't say she allowed it to
Oh,
happen.
that's a good point. But
She wasn't
she lied
home.
for him.
She wasn't home. Well, she did. She did.
Why are you
Absolutely.
lying?
And there was a thing that was, I don't know if it was confirmed, but there was supposedly a neighbor saw them looking in the back of the car, in the trunk of the car, and she was crying. And so that came out like way later. I don't know if it's true or not.
But either way, she knew something. Even if she didn't know that he did it, let's just put, why is she lying for him?
Supposedly, he told her that night that he did it.
But then you know,
And,
and you're still lying for him, and you're a piece of
right.
shit. Sorry.
As much as I love you, Carrie, if you came to me today and you were like, I killed so and so, I'd turn your ass in.
Good.
I just don't have the patience or the tolerance for that kind of shit. So, anybody who knows me would know that.
Exactly.
Like, I don't care who you are. I have no problem turning you in if you're that much of a douche.
Agree, 100%.
So,
Note to
yeah.
self, don't
I
go to
don't.
Sandy with a body.
No. Unless it's like a mutual enemy, then you might have a fighting chance.
Yeah, no.
No, I don't understand why. I mean, I would be.
But
It would make me question everything.
exactly. That's kind of my point. Like, if somebody that I'm with, especially, asks me to lie for them, like, there's gonna be a whole lot of fucking questions. And 10 to 1, I'm probably not gonna do it because you'd have to come up with something pretty damn good to make
Yeah.
me, to convince me that it's okay for me to commit perjury.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're asking me to lie for you, it's because you did something wrong.
Exactly.
And in my family, like, we have a belief, and we all kind of say it, if you don't want people to know, don't do it. And
Exactly.
that's ultimately what it comes down to for me is if you don't want people to find out, it's probably something you shouldn't be doing in the first place.
Well, yeah, and if you're not willing to accept the consequences of your actions, then don't do it. That's kind of always been my philosophy on life.
Yeah,
So.
so I wouldn't personally lie for him. I don't know if it was a, if she was scared of him, if she was just, it's already, I mean, people get this logic in their head of, there, it's already done, there's nothing I can do to change it, so I might as well save this person.
No.
And I don't agree with that at
No.
all.
No.
Yeah,
Because
it
the
is already
just
done. You
it
know
is already
what?
done. You can't bring back the kids, but you can bring justice to those children.
Yeah, because you got to stop it from ever happening again. If he did it once,
Exactly.
what's going to stop him from doing it again?
Exactly.
And that's my biggest problem. Because honestly, a lot of people are repeat offenders.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard to rehabilitate, especially when people have been in prison. Like, what life are you going back to? And how are you better off in life after you get out of prison than when you started?
And a lot of people come out worse.
Exactly.
Which sucks. But yeah, so Carr's in prison or not Carr. Huntley's in prison for at least 40 years. Hopefully he won't get out after that. I honestly don't think he deserves to be out. I
Don't
don't feel
think
like
she
40 years is
deserves to be
enough.
out. No.
The only thing about her is she didn't actually commit the offense, but I feel like lying for him, yeah, I feel like it needs a stiffer punishment.
Agreed.
Personally.
I completely agree. But
So that's it. That's the end of our psychics who
that's
solved crimes. And
yes. So I just wonder who out there, after hearing all these stories, do you have more tendency to believe in psychics? Does it depend on the situation? Do these not convince you at all? Like, what are your feelings towards, psychics who help people?
do you have any of your own experiences with psychics that have led you to believe or have made you a believer? I mean, I've done readings too, like even not believing in some of the things they say are
Yeah,
pretty interesting.
they are. Agreed, I have too. So, by all means, email us, message us on our Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. Or if you have any other crime categories that you would like us to cover, please let us know. Until next week.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye. Bye.